I want you to imagine something for a second. You are sitting in a doctor's waiting room.
Right. We've all been there.
Yeah, exactly. Let's say it's a beautiful sunny day in Irvine, California. You've just walked into a local clinic, the kind you've, been going to for years.
The familiar spot.
Exactly. The receptionist smiles, hands you a clipboard, and asks you to update your information. So you sit down and you just start filling it out.
Just kind of on autopilot.
Yeah. Your name, your address, your social security number, your complete medical history.
The medications you take.
Right. Your health insurance ID. You are handing over the most sensitive, intimate details of your entire life. And as you hand that clipboard back over the counter so it can be, typed into their system, do you ever stop and wonder just how safe that information really is?
It's a deeply unsettling question when you actually pause to think about it. I mean, we trust our doctors with our physical health implicitly, but as a society, we also blindly trust them with our digital identities, and often without asking a single question about their security.
Exactly. And that digital trust is what we are focusing on today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission today is to explore a hidden but absolutely critical battlefield, and that's the digital security of local medical practices.
That's a huge topic.
It really is. And we are drawing our insights today from a very comprehensive 2026 Cybersecurity Guide and Service Overview. It was published by Technegian, which is an IT firm that specializes in protecting Orange County healthcare practices.
Which is great because it gives us this fascinating boots on the ground perspective. You know, this isn't abstract academic theory we're talking about.
Right.
This is what is happening right now, today, in local clinics.
Okay, let's unpack this because the statistics from the Department of Health and Human Services for 2025 are just staggering.
Yeah.
In just one year, the HHS recorded over 720 healthcare data breaches.
Wow.
Yeah, and those breaches affected more than 180 million patient records.
That is just massive.
It is. If you are listening to this right now, I really want you to think about that number. That is more than half the population of the United States compromised in a single year.
And, you know, that data point right there tells us everything we need to know about the severity of this issue. It is crucial to understand that this is no longer just an IT problem that gets relegated to the basement server room.
Yeah, totally.
This is a fundamental crisis of patient care. I mean, if you interact with the healthcare system in any capacity, which is literally all of us, or frankly, if you run any business that handles sensitive data, understanding this landscape is essential.
Because it has real-world consequences.
Exactly. When a medical system goes down or data is compromised, it directly impacts human well-being.
Which brings us to a major question. You know, when we hear about massive hacks on the news, it's really easy to assume that cybercriminals are only going after the giant hospital conglomerates.
Right, the multi-state networks.
Yeah, the huge ones. So why are small private practices, places with maybe 5 to 50 employees in towns across the country, why are they prime targets? Because I have to push back on the premise here a little bit.
Go for it.
If I'm a hacker, why am I going to bother with a local dentist or a small family clinic when I could try to hit a massive national network? It just sounds like these small clinics are storing vault levels of gold, but guarding it with a screen door.
That's a great analogy.
So why bother with a small fry? It seems like a waste of time.
What's fascinating here is the underlying economics of the dark web. You have to look at the motivation. I mean, cybercriminals are essentially running illegal businesses, right?
Right.
And they follow the path of least resistance to the most money. So in the digital underworld, a single patient record, what the healthcare industry calls protected health information, or PHI,
Yeah.
sells for 10 to 50 times the value of a stolen credit card.
Wait, really? 10 to 50 times more.
Yes.
But I would think a credit card gives you instant cash. Why is my medical file so much more valuable?
Because of the nature of the data, just think about the mechanics of credit card fraud. If your credit card is stolen, you call the bank, they cancel it, and it's practically useless to the hacker within 5 minutes.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But PHI is immutable. It doesn't change. You cannot call a bank to change your social security number.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You cannot change your date of birth, your past diagnoses, or your medical billing codes. That permanent data can be used for years to commit identity theft or file fraudulent medical claims.
Or even extortion, right?
Exactly. They can extort the patient directly by threatening to release their private medical history online.
Okay, so the value of the data is incredibly high. It's a literal gold mine. But going back to my screen door analogy, Are small practices really that easy to break into? I mean, why wouldn't they just upgrade their security?
Well, according to the source material, they are highly vulnerable. And it really comes down to a perfect storm of under-resourced IT and legacy technology. Imagine a 20-person clinic in Irvine. They likely do not have a dedicated full-time cybersecurity expert on staff.
Right, they probably have an office manager trying to juggle IT on the side.
Exactly. And furthermore, they are often running on really outdated technology. Medical devices like MRI machines or specialized diagnostic tools, they can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right, and they are built to last physically.
Yeah, structurally they are fine. But the software running them might be an operating system from 10 years ago that no longer receives security updates.
Oh, that's a problem.
A huge problem. But replacing a perfectly functioning $150,000 medical device just because its software is outdated, that's a tough financial pill for a small practice to swallow.
So they just keep using it.
Exactly. And attackers know this. They literally scan the internet specifically looking for these exact unpatched vulnerabilities.
Which perfectly transitions us into the how. If we understand why they are targeted, we really need to map out how the attackers are actually getting in. And reading through this 2026 threat landscape from Technigian, what struck me is that it's rarely a brute force hack like you see in the movies.
No, not at all.
It usually starts with something incredibly mundane, like an email.
Precisely. It's really important to note here that 90% of healthcare breaches begin with an email.
90%.
Yeah, 90. This is what the industry calls business email compromise, or BEC, and phishing. But we aren't talking about poorly spelled emails from foreign princes anymore.
Right. The guide highlights a 67% surge in business email compromise specifically targeting medical billing staff just since 2023.
Yeah, it's very targeted.
They are going right for the folks who handle the invoices. But how does that actually work? How does an email take down an entire clinic?
Let's walk through the mechanism. An attacker will spoof an email to make it look exactly like it's coming from a trusted vendor. Say, the clinic's electronic health record software, like Epic or Athena. It looks perfectly legitimate. It asks a billing staff member to log in to verify an invoice. So the staff member clicks the link, enters their password into a fake portal, and nothing happens. They think the site just glitched.
But the attacker now has their credentials.
Exactly. They have the keys to the castle.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because the attacker doesn't strike right away, do they?
No, they don't. They log in silently. They might sit inside the clinic's email system for weeks, just reading emails, learning the schedule, figuring out who authorizes payments.
But doing reconnaissance.
Exactly.
So they use that compromised email to launch the main event, which, according to the source, is the number one threat facing these clinics. Ransomware.
The absolute biggest threat. Once the attacker maps out the network from that compromised email account, they deploy malicious software that basically scrambles the mathematics of every single file on the clinic's network.
Everything.
Everything. It encrypts the EHR, the billing system, the patient notes. It turns all that data into unreadable gibberish. Then they drop a digital ransom note demanding payment, usually in cryptocurrency, just to give the clinic the decryption key to unlock their own files.
And the reality of this is grim. The source notes that a single ransomware attack can shut down a practice for 7 to 21 days.
Which is an eternity in healthcare.
Yeah. If you're listening, imagine running a medical clinic or being a patient needing urgent care with zero access to patient histories, allergies, or surgical schedules for 3 whole weeks. The doctors are literally flying blind.
That's terrifying.
And the financial fallout. The average recovery cost exceeds $1.2 million for small healthcare providers.
And paying the ransom doesn't even guarantee you'll get your data back. Plus, under the law, you still have to report it to the government as a massive data breach, which triggers a whole new set of nightmares.
Right. But let me challenge this for a second. What if a clinic has a really smart staff? Like, nobody clicks the bad email links.
Mm-hmm.
Are they safe then?
I wish.
Because the guide mentions unsecured endpoints as another major entry point. And this blew my mind. They specifically called out smart printers and check-in kiosks.
Yeah.
How does a printer compromise my medical records?
This is a concept called lateral movement, and it's critical to understand. If we connect this to the bigger picture of how networks function, a modern smart printer isn't just a printer anymore.
Right.
It is a fully functional computer with a hard drive, an operating system, and a network connection.
So it's sitting right there on the clinic's internal Wi-Fi.
Exactly. Mm. Now, IT departments usually remember to put antivirus software on laptops and servers,
right,
but they almost always forget about the printer in the corner. So an attacker scans the internet, finds the IP address of that specific printer, and exploits a known unpatched vulnerability to break into it.
And then what?
Once they are inside the printer, they use it as a bridge. They move laterally across the internal network, sliding right past the main firewall to access the servers where the patient data actually lives.
That is terrifying. It's like leaving the doggy door wide open while putting three deadbolts on the front door.
It really is.
But the threats aren't just coming from the outside either. The guide also talks about insider threats and cloud misconfigurations. And this proves that not all breaches involve some shadowy hacker in a hoodie.
Yes. The reality is that human error is a massive vulnerability. As practices have moved to telehealth and cloud-based systems, these new risks emerge. What happens here is often just a simple administrative mistake.
Like what?
Well, an IT person setting up a cloud storage folder, what Amazon Web Services calls an S3 bucket, or maybe a Microsoft SharePoint drive, they might accidentally toggle a permission setting from private to public.
This is a wrong click on a drop-down menu.
Just one click. And suddenly, thousands of patient records are exposed to the open internet for anyone to stumble across.
Wow.
There is no hacking involved at all. The door was just accidentally taken off its hinges. Furthermore, accidental exposures by a well-meaning front desk staff member, like emailing a patient list to the wrong vendor, or an unauthorized access by a disgruntled former employee who still has an active login, those are fully reportable incidents.
The damage is exactly the same, whether it's malicious or accidental.
Yeah.
So if you're a clinic manager listening to this, the threat landscape is essentially a minefield.
Absolutely.
And because it's this dangerous, the government doesn't just tap clinics on the shoulder and politely suggest they upgrade their security, they mandate it.
Oh, yes, they do.
Which brings us to the severe regulatory and financial consequences of failing to protect this data.
We have to talk about the heavy hand of IPAA.
Right. And let's ground this in the actual cost of a breach, because this is probably the most shocking statistic in our entire deep dive. According to IBM's 2023 report, the average cost of a healthcare data breach is $10.9 million.
It is staggering. It makes healthcare the most expensive industry for data breaches, and it has held that terrible title for the 13th consecutive year.
13 years.
Right.
If you're a small clinic in Irvine, even a tiny fraction of that $10.9 million is a practice-ending event, you are bankrupt.
Without a doubt.
But why is it so expensive? I imagine it's not just buy new computers.
Not at all. A massive portion of that cost comes from regulatory fines. The IPAA security rule is built on three foundational pillars of safeguards: administrative, physical, and technical.
Let's break those down so we know what the government's actually looking for.
Gladly. Administrative safeguards mean having actual documented security policies. Like, have you done a formal risk analysis? Do you train your staff on security every year?
Okay, that makes sense.
Then physical safeguards mean controlling who can physically touch the machines. Are the servers in a locked room? Do front desk monitors have privacy filters so patients can't read them over the counter?
Right.
And finally, technical safeguards cover the digital side. Access controls, audit logs tracking who looked at what file, and encryption.
And to enforce these three pillars, you have the Office for Civil Rights, or the OCR. They're the federal agency conducting the audits. And the way the source describes it, I picture an OCR audit like an incredibly aggressive IRS audit.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
But instead of an auditor just looking at your receipts to see if your math adds up, they're walking into your clinic and rigorously inspecting exactly how well you locked your digital filing cabinets.
That's a very apt analogy. And if the OCR auditors find that your digital locks were weak or non-existent, the penalties are designed to be punitive. The fines range from $100 to $50,000 per violation.
And we really need to clarify what per violation means, because that's the trap. If a clinic leaves a spreadsheet with 2,000 patient records on an unencrypted thumb drive, and they lose it at a coffee shop, that is not one violation, is it?
No, it is not. The government can interpret that as 2,000 individual violations.
So at $50,000 a pop, you're instantly in the millions.
Precisely. Now, there is a legal cap of $1.9 million per violation category per year, but you can see how quickly a clinic could hit that maximum penalty and be completely wiped out.
Yeah, instantly.
And the Technigian source explicitly notes that the OCR has been increasingly aggressive in auditing small and medium-sized practices, specifically in California. They are no longer just going after the big hospitals.
Okay, so if I'm a doctor or an office manager listening to this, my blood pressure is definitely spiking.
I would imagine so.
Knowing the terrifying risks, knowing how the hackers operate, and knowing the crushing federal laws that will punish you if you fail is frankly overwhelming.
It's a lot to take in.
How does a busy medical office actually fix this without completely halting patient care? Because at the end of the day, they need to see patients.
This is where we have to transition from the problem to the solution. It's about implementing a structured, practical defense. You know, you don't have to be a tech genius. You just have to follow a proven playbook.
So what does this all mean? Let's look at the mechanics of defense. Based on the source material, Technigian requires a 5-part checklist as an absolute minimum baseline for the clinics they protect. It's a fantastic blueprint. Let's start with pillar one, network security. And they specifically talk about network segmentation.
Yes. This involves deploying a true healthcare-grade firewall, not just a standard router you buy at a big box store. But the key mechanism here is segmentation. You have to physically separate your networks.
I love the way this works. If you picture a submarine, it has watertight bulkheads.
Exactly.
If the front of the sub hits a rock and starts taking on water, they seal the bulkhead doors. The front compartment floods, but the water can't get to the rest of the ship, so the submarine doesn't sink.
That is the exact principle of network segmentation. You separate the guest Wi-Fi in the waiting room from the network the medical devices use, which is separate from the staff workstations.
Okay.
So if a patient logs into your guest Wi-Fi with a malware-infected smartphone, essentially creating a leak, that malware hits the bulkhead. It absolutely cannot jump over and infect the clinic's MRI machine or the billing server.
That makes total sense. So the network is segmented. Pillar two is endpoint protection. This focuses on the devices themselves. The guide demands full disk encryption using tools like BitLocker for Windows or FileVault for Mac on all laptops and tablets.
Right.
And also instituting a strict 72-hour patching window for critical updates. Why exactly 72 hours?
Because of how fast the dark web operates. When a major software vendor like Microsoft or Apple announces a vulnerability and releases a patch to fix it, attackers immediately start scanning the internet for systems that haven't applied the fix yet.
Wow, immediately.
Yes, it's a race. If you wait a week to update your clinic systems, the attackers will find you first. You are a sitting duck.
Okay, so we've segmented the network and encrypted the laptops. Pillar three is identity and access management. How do we prove the person logging in is who they say they are?
Yeah, that's crucial.
This means multi-factor authentication, or MFA, on absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm.
But let me push back here. Isn't a really strong, complex password enough these days?
Absolutely not. And going back to our discussion on phishing, if a staff member is tricked into typing their password into a fake website, a strong password does not help you. The attacker has it.
Right, because they just copy it.
Exactly. But if you have MFA enabled, the system requires a second form of proof, like a code sent to the staff member's physical smartphone. The hacker in another country might have the password, but they don't have the physical phone, so the attack fails.
The mechanism breaks the attack chain.
Yes.
And under this pillar, there's also a really specific rule regarding insider threats. You must revoke access for terminated employees within 1 hour of them leaving.
That is vital.
If they are fired at 2 p.m., by 3 p.m., they should be completely locked out of every digital system. If they go home and log back into the patient database out of spite, that is a massive HIPAA violation for the clinic.
Exactly. Now, pillar four is email security. Since we established that 90% of breaches start here, you need to lock down the inbox. The guide mentions configuring DMARC records.
I had to look this one up to understand the mechanism. DMARC acts like a digital wax seal on an envelope.
Oh, I like that.
When your clinic sends an email, the server stamps it with this invisible cryptographic seal. When a hacker tries to spoof your clinic's domain to trick your staff or patients, they can't forge the seal.
Right.
The receiving server looks at the fake email, sees the wax seal is missing, knows it's a forgery, and throws it straight in the trash.
That's a perfect way to visualize it. And alongside the technical blocks, you also need to run simulated phishing campaigns. You actually have to send fake, safe phishing emails to your own staff to see who clicks the bad links so you can train them. You have to build a human firewall.
Which brings us to pillar five, the ultimate safety net, backups.
This is your absolute last line of defense against ransomware. Technigian details the strict 3-2-1 backup rule. You need three copies of your data stored on two different types of media, with one copy stored securely offsite in the cloud.
But wait, I have to ask. If a hacker gets into my network and deploys ransomware that encrypts all my files, wouldn't it just encrypt my backups too? I mean, hitting save doesn't help if the whole hard drive is held hostage.
You've identified the exact reason why standard backups fail against modern ransomware. This is why that offsite copy must be what we call immutable.
Immutable?
Yes. Immutable means the data is write once, read only. Once the backup is saved to the cloud, its code is locked. Even if a hacker gains full administrative control of your network, the mechanics of an immutable backup mean it physically cannot be altered, encrypted, or deleted by anyone.
So when the ransomware hits, you just wipe the infected servers, download the unencryptable backup, and you're back in business.
Yep.
The guide states the goal is a recovery time objective of under 4 hours, meaning if you get hit at 8 a.m., you are back up and running, seeing patients by noon.
Exactly. It takes the power completely away from the extortionists.
Okay, we've outlined a fortress, but let's address the pragmatic business reality that has to be on the mind of anyone running a practice right now. What does all of this actually cost?
The big question.
Right. We're talking about enterprise-grade security for a 20-person office. Is it affordable?
The source provides some very transparent numbers. For a fully managed cybersecurity program from Technigian, for a small to mid-sized medical office in Irvine, it typically ranges from $800 to $3,500 a month, depending on the size and complexity of the clinic.
Which, when you weigh it against the $10.9 million average cost of a breach or a $50,000 per violation IPA fine,
it is an incredibly strong return on investment. It's essentially operational insurance. And the timeline is practical. They can implement those foundational controls like the endpoint encryption, the MFA, and the immutable backups in just 2 to 4 weeks.
Oh, that's fast.
Reaching full HIPAA compliant maturity with all the policies and audits takes about 60 to 90 days.
And speaking of insurance, there's a new reality we have to mention here regarding cyber insurance policies. You literally cannot just buy a policy to cover your negligence anymore.
No, those days are over.
Insurers have realized the risk is too astronomical. Now, they require a documented HIPAA risk assessment and full MFA deployment just to process your application. If you don't have the basics in place, you are completely uninsurable.
And that's where having a specialized partner comes in. Looking at the data provided by Technigian, they've mapped out exactly what it takes to fix this. They provide managed detection and response, or MDR. This means their security team is monitoring the network 24/7.
Wow.
Their average detection time for a threat is under 15 minutes.
To put that in perspective, the industry average is 197 days to notice a breach.
Yeah, let that sink in.
197 days for hackers to roam freely through your files versus 15 minutes to shut them down. They also perform vulnerability assessment and penetration testing, or VAPT, which is basically ethical hacking. They purposely try to break into your systems to find the holes before the bad guys do.
It is incredibly valuable to have a partner who understands both the complex technology and the very specific, unforgiving legal requirements of healthcare. And if you're a clinic in Orange County dealing with this, you can actually reach out to them directly.
Right. Their contact info is in the guide. For practices in Irvine, their phone number is 949-379-850. Or you can email them at sales@technigian.com. They're located right at 18 Technology Drive, Suite 141 in Irvine, California.
It's good to have local experts you can rely on.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up today's deep dive, the main takeaway from all of this source material is crystal clear. Cybersecurity for medical offices is no longer an IT luxury that you can put off until next quarter's budget.
Not at all.
It is a strict legal obligation under IPA, and much more importantly, it is a fundamental duty of care to the patients who trust you with their lives.
It's been a fascinating look into a system that so many of us take for granted. We focus so much on the physical hygiene of a doctor's office, we forget to demand digital hygiene.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for guiding us through the mechanics of all this today.
Always a pleasure.
And for you, listening right now, we're going to leave you with one final thought to mull over.
This raises an important question.
Yes, it does. As our digital identities become completely inseparable from our physical bodies, and as the consequences of these data breaches become increasingly catastrophic, how long until we see a massive cultural and legal shift?
That's the real question.
Will there come a day, very soon, where a failure in cybersecurity is treated with the exact same severity as traditional medical malpractice? If a doctor's negligence in the operating room causes harm, there is massive liability. If a clinic's negligence in their server room causes a patient's sensitive data to be weaponized for extortion, will digital malpractice become the defining healthcare crisis of the next decade?
It's something to think about.
It really is. Something to think about the next time you sit in that waiting room, take that clipboard, and hand over your entire life.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.